Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Brian.
I'm in recovery from pledge drive, so now
all the words fumble out. And
yes.
That's okay. I mean, it makes us human. People know that we're actually here speaking and we're not automatrons or something.
Right. We're so live. We're not going back and fixing the mistakes.
No, you don't get to go back and fix the errors. So hopefully we'll make few. Mm-hmm. Few as usual. But yay, here we are up and running on a Tuesday afternoon. And, you know, there's so many things that go on in the course of a week, right? So many different events and, you know, months and things that we're supposed to celebrate or honor. You know, today is Teacher Appreciation Day. And it's been Teacher Appreciation Week on a lot of the school campuses. And so, as always, I like to shout out to my, you know, two teachers that most influenced me of all time, Mr. Cherry and Mr. Ferentinos. Both are not with us any longer, which makes me really sad because I loved them both very much. But they had so much to do with where I am today. And every week when I get on the air and every day when I stand in front of my class, I think about the influence they both had in helping to shape the direction of my life and the ways that I pushed myself or the things that I even were interested in. You know, Mr. Ferentinos was my journalism teacher. And so the communication skills and the interest in, you know, sharing knowledge and, you know, finding stories. I mean, that came from my time with him. Then Mr. Cherry was my sixth grade teacher. He told my mother, and I've told you this story before, but he told my mother, I think, in one of their conferences, he said, you know, unless we can figure out a job that pays Elizabeth to talk, I'm not really sure what she'll be good at. And so that kind of became, you know, the driving force of my life. And it seems like everything I did had to do with some sort of communication skill. And my undergraduate degree was in communication, thanks to Mr. Cherry. Mm. And so, you know, I think about those influences and how much teachers do and how much they influence the lives of so many of their students in ways that they never really will know, or, you know, maybe they do know if their students come back and tell them. But there's so much power in those experiences that shape who we are. So I want to take a minute to acknowledge all those teachers. And then also coming up on Sunday is Mother's Day, just in case my family has forgotten. you still have time to figure out something. I'm not sure what that is. But anyway, yeah, so Mother's Day is on Sunday, and I'm actually going to spend part of the weekend with my mom, which will be fun, just the two of us hanging out and chatting. Spending some time visiting, which you don't get a lot of alone time. You notice, you know, as you get older, it's grand, you know, you're with both parents or you're with all the siblings. You know, it's rare mm-hmm. that you get one-on-one with anyone in your family.
Yeah, true.
So I'm really looking forward to spending a little bit of time with my mom. And then I think I'll have some time with my daughter and my son-in-law and my granddaughter, which will be fun mm-hmm. This weekend. So I'm going to get a full Mother's Day experience. But again, you know, like teachers, the impact mothers have on our lives is profound. You know, much of the joy that we experience in our lives comes from that nurturing of our mothers, and much of the misery that we experience in our life comes from the conflicts that we experience with our mothers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a rich and complex relationship that we have with our mothers. And then being a mother and trying to navigate how to best nurture our children and support them and guide them. I mean, it comes without a guidebook or a rule book, right? It's the hardest job in the world to do with very little recognition unless you're doing it poorly, which is
right.
which is difficult. But the influence is so vast in so many ways that, you know, one day is hardly enough to recognize the contributions that mothers make in their children's lives and how do we And I don't think in a lot of ways we even know until we get older how we've been influenced by our mothers. I mean, in the typical typically rebellious way. There are things in my life that I knew I was drawn to that are similar to the things that my mom was drawn to that I purposely did not want to do because I didn't want to be continuously aligned mm-hmm. with being like my mom. And then the older I got, the more I embraced the things that we were similar in, and it made my life easier. Like the constantly fighting against started to become tiring. And maybe also there came a point where I noticed I didn't want to continue that with my own daughters, that I figure I need to, you know, do the work and heal the relationship with my own mom so that I don't pass that down with my daughters. So I'm hoping that, right, you pay it forward and cure it or heal it from the relationships coming up. So the influence of teachers, the influence of our mothers, and then the thing I really wanted to focus on today is the influence of names. And how the names that we are given, mostly by our mothers, maybe by parents, I don't know how much impact. I mean, maybe with each generation, dads have more impact or more influence over the naming of their children. But it seems like, you know, mothers tend to be the driving force of the first names, at least, mm-hmm. especially because traditionally in Western culture, our children take the husband's or the father's last name. So maybe that gives mom a little more clout when it comes to the first name.
Yeah.
So the influence mothers have not only in raising us, but also in the names that we're given, right? That name that is put upon us carries a lot of influence throughout our lives, impacts in ways that we might recognize or not recognize, and that influence us, I don't know, off and on throughout our lives. Like how, you know, who gets beat up on the playground? Not usually, right? The kids with the name like Rex,
right?
You know that our name carries a lot of influence in all of our social aspects of our life and even in our professional lives. So my, you know, because my granddaughter is 6 months old now, I've been trying to not be, you know, pushy, but I'm a mother-in-law, so I guess maybe I get to. I'm a grandma and a mother-in-law. But I've been saying, hey, you know, maybe it'd be fun to have some sort of naming ceremony, some way of kind of welcoming her officially to the world. You know, I know there's religious ceremonies, there's baptisms and different, you know, ways of recognizing children or naming them in their religious organizations. But how about just in a way within our community, you know, to acknowledge her name or to give her a name? Because I really believe in the ritual of things in life, right? That when we actually take the time to honor change or make a ceremony about an event, it makes it more real. It gives it more depth in our psyche. It gives it more importance in that we hold it in a deeper, more meaningful way. That how we honor and recognize occasions and changes really impact or influence the long-term effect of that relationship or the health of that relationship or even the feelings that we have about that relationship or that person, just like with weddings, right? We come together not just to have a big party, although that's what it's become in many ways,
yeah.
but the wedding ceremony was a way of coming together and acknowledging and honoring and making this pact between two families, two individuals that sealed this not just for the individuals but for the families and the psyches. And so anyway, I threw that to my daughter about the idea, you know, of a naming ceremony of some kind and said, you know, let's research it and see what's out there. But I just kind of tossed that onto her plate. And then she came back to me and she said, you know, you should do a show about just names in general because, you know, there was such this long silence about what they were going to name my granddaughter. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't tell anybody, which was great because I think when we talk about names too early, everybody has an opinion and I think that makes
right.
it a challenge. And I'm sure you experienced that.
Yeah, definitely.
When you guys were expecting Kieran.
Well, we got judged for not having a name.
Well, you say, yeah, you can't win, right? People
right.
say, why haven't you thought of a name?
And, right.
So she said, you know, what about names and how do they influence us and how do we choose names? So I said, that's a great idea for a show. So the third reason why I liked the idea of the name show or how we came to names is that I have a charm bracelet. And I've worn it a couple times, and you always get mad at me because I shake my...
Yeah, you can hear it.
I know. But I have this charm bracelet that was my grandmother's that I absolutely adore. And the sound that it makes, and I don't know why I didn't wear it today. I should have. But the sound that it makes reminds me of her. I can picture her because she had it on. I could hear that tinkling sound. But it's all little charms with the initials of all of her children and grandchildren on it. And so it has come been passed down to me. And so my girls were looking at it at Christmas because my husband gave me new charms with my girls' initials and Georgia, my granddaughter's initials. So the girls were looking at it and they said, "We don't see you on here. Why aren't you on here?" And I said, "No, I'm on there. I'm actually the biggest charm on my grandmother's bracelet," which must be telling, right? And they said, "What? What are these initials? D-E-W." I said, "Oh, my original name when I was born was Diane Elizabeth." And they looked at me with horror. I mean, horrified. "Mom, you've had a secret name all of our lives and we never knew it." And I said, "Well, my mom quickly changed it rather shortly after I was born. She, you know, she named me that, I think, in a little of a rebellious mood herself, and then realized that she didn't really like the name and so changed it to Elizabeth shortly afterwards. So it never really was my name, but they could not let it go. And it continues to be a thing for the last 6 months. Every now and then my girls will say, "You're a stranger to us. We don't really know you. How many other secrets do you have?"
Right.
I said, "You need to talk to your grandma about that. I don't know." So here's where we are today. I would love to hear the stories of people's names. How did they come to be? How did you decide what to name your child? Or what does your name mean? Or what did you find out about that name that was really special for you? Or maybe wasn't? Or how did your name influence your life? You know, do you feel like you got more ahead in life because of your name? Or that you were bullied or dismissed? You know, did your name give you an advantage in any way or a disadvantage? How, you know, did you have a naming ceremony for your children, or did you do some sort of, you know, blessing or naming to kind of bring their name and them into the world? In some cultures, the naming ceremony involves the father whispering the child's name into his ear four times or her ear four times, saying it softly, and then announcing it to the family. I mean, I think that's so beautiful. So I'm just curious to know what your experience is with this. 805-781-3875 is a number to be part of this conversation. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you can be part of the conversation by giving us a call. You can also like our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, to give your thoughts or feedback or to find out what shows are going to be upcoming. We also are available on iTunes for podcasting. If you go to iTunes and type in under podcasts, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and hit subscribe, they'll send you our shows every week, and they'll be there on your device to listen to. So we love to have you carry us with you in your back pocket. And then you can also check out shows at kcbx.org on our website under the News Talk tab. All of our shows are also there, and you can stream them anytime, or you can stream us live from your computer. We're very tech savvy and ready to go. So the naming stories, you know, the brief naming stories of my two girls, my older daughter, Kirsten Isabel, who is the mother to my granddaughter, Georgia. Kirsten Isabel. Kirsten was named for mine and my husband's best friend who was killed in a car accident when we were seniors in college. Talk about things that change the trajectory of your life. But our friends Sam and Kirsten had been very dear to us through college and were part of our love story. And we had planned to live our lives together up in Oregon post-graduation, and they were tragically killed. And Kirsten was one of those rare people that you may meet once in a lifetime. So when I had my daughter, I knew immediately we were going to name her Kirsten. And Isabel was for my grandmother, whose name was Isabel. But the thing that's interesting about the name is that my Kirsten, now at 30 years old, carries traits that are not mine and are not my husband's. You know, she carries traits of the original Kirsten in really interesting, profound ways that I'm not sure how they got there. I'm not sure how they came to be, but she lives on in my daughter. And I find it really incredible and really beautiful to see that in her name. And then with my daughter, Kelly Elizabeth. Elizabeth was my other grandmother's name. So I had Elizabeth and Isabel for my grandmother names, which I think were great ones.
Yeah, that's interesting. Real quick, me and my brother's middle names are after each of our respective grandparents, too.
See, it kind of holds cool. That, right? Yeah. Carrying it through the story. So Kirsten Isabel, Kelly Fiona Barrett, originally was Kelly Elizabeth. And Kelly I loved because it meant warrior woman. And I just really, at the time that I had her, was feeling like there needed to be more empowerment in our family. I just was feeling like there needed to be more strength. So I loved that name. And then Elizabeth for my grandmother. But then as she was going along that first month, I kept kind of feeling this vibe from her, which I know sounds weird. Don't judge. But I just kept feeling this vibe about Fiona. And I didn't know the name and I didn't know what it meant. And so I looked it up. And Fiona means white maiden. And Kelly was born, I mean, you remember, Brian, she's like, you've seen her. She's white, blonde hair, yeah. And no eyebrows. And so I thought, how strange is that? Kelly Fiona means white warrior woman. And
she sounds like Kelly to me.
She sounds like Kelly. So I just am fascinated, again, by the mysteries of stories or the name choosing and how they came to be, just because of my own experience with my own two girls. 805-781-3875. Hey, Sean, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My accent is from New Zealand. I live here now. But back in the day, in the early 80s, I was a musician, still am, but was in a band with a friend, and we both decided we would change our names. And I suppose it's really because we're influenced by other musicians who had stage names. My friend changed his name to Zenon Void, and then consequently since then has changed it to Stage Presence. So, of course, those days are long gone, and he's in the computer business now, but he still goes by the name Stage Presence. I changed my name to Zane Pagan simply because I like the name Zane and because I wanted to sort of disassociate myself also from religious overtones by having the name Pagan, although I wasn't practicing paganism. But I was amazed with the sort of sense of freedom that came with the idea of changing my name and creating a completely new identity for myself. But I think it takes a lot of courage for people to do that, and ultimately I didn't stick with the name. And I sometimes wonder what my life might have been like or how my career might have gone if I'd kept the name and created a completely separate alter ego for myself.
How old were you when you made the change?
Well, probably 21-ish, 22, somewhere around there.
Yeah, and that classic kind of identity formation stage, according to Erickson, right, where you're kind of trying on different identities. And when you took on the name, did you behave differently?
Well, you know, I don't think I did. I don't think I didn't want to become, I came out of a pretty dysfunctional family, and I didn't want to become a wild man because I just didn't think I'd last that long. Mm-hmm. And all of that, I think, also ties into the amount of success you have. So if we'd had success, I probably would have gone further into sort of that identity. But I never really found that success. And I'm not sure if it is because I didn't have the courage to really embrace that name and really try to walk that path. But I didn't know what it meant to do that, and I didn't know where I would end up. But over the years, I've often thought about it, and recently with my girlfriend, we've been discussing this, and she's been calling me Zane, and I don't think I really want to go back to it.
But maybe there's a resurgence in the strength of Sean, right? Maybe it's more a calling out to just a shift in how you envision the Sean in you.
Yes, and it was also trying to escape my family identity too, I think. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think I sort of decided to turn and face the family dynamic and try to work through the issues rather than to run away from it, which I felt I was sort of tempted to do.
And I think that there's innate strength in that also, Sean, because I think that's, again, we talked about that identity formation part in you know, late adolescence, early adulthood, where we do kind of separate ourselves from our family identity, whether it was a great background or a challenging background, and kind of figure out if we, you know, agree with where we came from or we want a different path. Like, that's that normal transition. And I think actually turning and facing it and trying to own it for yourself, to be the Sean you are separate from them, that's the ultimate maturity, right? That is the processing through young adulthood into actual adulthood, where you stand on your own as Sean, right? In spite of your family and in how you've created yourself.
Yes, I think so. Though the question is always like, I will never know what could have been.
Absolutely.
But a final point, I heard a very interesting today on a public radio station about a man who studies birds and says that birds, they've discovered that birds name their young.
Hmm.
They give them a sound, and other birds will recognize that sound and identify that sound as that bird.
That's fascinating. And I'm going to look into that because I think that was one of the other points I wanted to make today was that, you know, in the naming, that identity gives us a real sense of security and purpose and foundation that's essential for children in their development. So you could imagine just with nurturing any young baby to have that identifiable sound or recognition gives them that connection to their parents and their foundation.
Very Sean, powerful, yeah.
It is. Thank you for taking the time to call.
Thank you.
Have a great afternoon. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. 805-781-3875 if you want to be part of this conversation. We're talking about names and naming traditions and what it is about our names that influence us or maybe have or have not influenced us. Sherry, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. My name is Sherry now, but it used to be Helen when I was little. And I was named after my grandmother, Helen. And my mother's name was Alice Gray, and she was named after her grandmother, Alice Gray, who was born in Missouri, and they liked the name Alice, and in Missouri at the time of the original Alice Gray, double names were common, and so the story goes that the attending doctor was Dr. Gray. And so they named that first girl back near the Civil War, Alice Gray. And then that Alice Gray had a Helen, and that Helen had an Alice Gray. And that Alice Gray, which was my mother, had me as a Helen. And my daughter, one of my daughters, is also named Alice Gray.
Wow.
So for five generations, we go back and forth. And when I was going to name my daughter, Alice Gray, it was very scary because I was afraid that the issues I had with my mother would transfer to my daughter. And so I didn't name her for about a week. And then when I finally named her Alice Gray, immediately she became her own person.
Mm.
And then when I was 10, I changed my name to my middle name, which is Cheryl, named after a great uncle. And so I go by Sherry. But I love the name Alice Gray. I've never heard anybody else except those three people in my family who have that name.
And what is it about that traditional, you know, passing along of the names throughout families? You know, because throughout history, boys have carried on the generational names of men, right, in their family histories. But it wasn't as traditional for women or girls to be carrying on the names of grandparents or grandmothers within the family.
I think it was in my family, mm-hmm. and it's a way of honoring the person. And when I decided at 10 to change my name from Helen to Sherry, my mother told me later that she was a little concerned that it would bother her mother because I was moving away from that name, but it didn't seem to. So it's a way of honoring the person. And that's why it scared me, too, to name my daughter Alice Gray.
Absolutely.
It would carry on issues for my mother, but it never did.
Well, and she's now made it her own Alice Gray, right? So the tradition carries on with a new personality.
And often people don't use both names. They say, oh, hello, Alice. And my mother didn't like that. And so she eventually went to Alicia and felt that that was okay. But I told my daughter, you know, just make them say your full name. I mean, people can get used to it. And so she does. If people call her Alice, she says, no, it's Alice Gray. It's a double name.
And there you go, giving her confidence in herself, speaking out her truth.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling in, Sherry. You know, and that's true. My older daughter, Kirsten, when she was in preschool and, you know, you're learning your name and how to write your name, she came home with her name written Kristen, Kristen, Kristen about 42 times. And I said, honey, your name is Kirsten. She said, yeah, I know, but I didn't want the teacher to feel bad. And I said, well, you need to go back and tell her your name because this name is very special that you have and to really own that. And I think there are those, you know, again, that identity formation in children is so powerful and having confidence and pride in who you're named for and what that name means and where you come from. It has a lot to do with our child's self-esteem and how they feel about themselves growing up. And again, is in such powerful ways, it can also have negative impacts where if children feel their name is a burden or, you know, so far our first two callers were people that change their name mm-hmm. in some way or for a period of time. So again, we're seeing that it's not something to take lightly. And our traditions and our culture, again, we don't have the same cultural naming ceremonies that other traditions or other traditional cultures have. And you know, we had at one point in 1912, the top five names were Mary, Helen, Dorothy, Margaret, and Ruth, and neither one of those names show up in the top 40 names today. Mm-hmm. And there were only about 200 names that people chose from back in 1912, and now that's just exploded, right? The names are chosen in a wide variety. Everything from, you know, Isabella, Jacob, and Cullen, which were names from the Twilight series, those names exploded because people were influenced. Or back in the 1950s, when Peter Pan premiered on Broadway, all of a sudden the name Wendy popped up mm-hmm. everywhere. So how we choose names is not necessarily tied to family. So I'm always curious to know, then where did the name and the meaning come from? Because for me, a lot of the family tie was important. I wanted my children to carry on the characteristics of the people that I named them for. And I always assumed that was true for most people, but maybe not. 805-781-3875. Hi, Rosemary. Or is it Rosemary?
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I have a number of names. I was named for two aunts, one who died at the age of 15 in my dad's arms. And that was Aunt Mary, and, you know, obviously I never knew her. And then my Aunt Rose was my dad's youngest sister. So I was named for those two aunts, Rose and Mary. And then my middle name, Anne, I don't know where that even came from. I never found out anything, although Anne is spelled A-N-N and A-N-N-E. I got A-N-N, and then my youngest sister was named Anne Marie, A-N-N-E. So obviously my parents liked that name. But I moved down to where I'm living now and joined a church, and there was another woman named Rose in the church. So I went from being called Rose to Rosemary. And then another woman came into the church, and her name was Rosemary. So two different people came up to me at, you know, apart from each other, not having spoken to each other, and said, we should call you Joy.
Nope. Oh.
So that is now the name I go by at church and in the town I live in. And, you know, my family still calls me Rose because that's what I've gone by all my life. But I am Joy to most people I know.
And just figuratively and with the name, then I would imagine that was what you must, that must be what you give
project
off to people.
Hey, sometimes, not all the time, but I am blind. I'm totally blind. I've been blind for 32 years. That's half of my life. And I was blind at the time I moved here. And, I, you know, even with all that, that's what people decided I should be called. And so I've been going by that. I didn't want to do it for a while. And then I just decided, why not? Two different people, not even talking to each other, both coming up to me. It's interesting.
You can't fight the joy when you have it, Rosemary.
Right. And, you know, and I actually got ID and everything in the name of Joy. And then after 9/11, I had to get a passport. And you can't, you know, when you have nothing in the name of Joy, my birth certificate is Rosemary. So I had to go back to the name Rosemary just for all business transactions. But people still, you know, they call me Joy. So that's who I am.
Oh, thank you for sharing your joy with me.
Oh, sure. Nice to talk to you.
Enjoy your afternoon. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We're talking about names and naming ceremonies. And how do our names influence our life? Or do they influence your life? How did you come to be who you are? You know, it's interesting. The Romans have an expression, and I'm sure I'm saying this incorrectly, but it's nomen est omen, which means name is destiny. And they believe that the name we carry is like a badge that buries our information, you know, that bears the information about us, about our class, our education level, our ethnic origin, or at least that of our families. And that it also in some ways will determine the different careers that we'll end up having later in life. For example, did you know that there is a large proportion of dentists that are named Dennis? and quite a few lawyers that are named Lauren. So, you know, what do you think about that idea that our name is destiny in some ways, that it's going to carry us in places? And also they talk about in employment studies, those with more common names or easily pronounced names tend to make a better first impressions on coworkers and bosses. And so it has a more positive influence in economic possibilities. Anyway, 805-781-3875. Hi, Marnie. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was just, my name is a little on the different side, and it's not actually my given name. My mother and grandmother and I were all named Marjorie. Oh. And when my grandmother was a young girl, her father gave her the nickname Marnie, and when I came along, you couldn't call all of us Marjorie, you know, and my grandmother had gone, had given up the name Marnie when she grew up and was called Marjorie. And my cousins couldn't, or my mother's cousins couldn't pronounce Marjorie. They called her Bay for some reason. We never knew why. But they called me Marnie. And, you know, it's not what I use for, you know, driver's licenses and passports and things like that. But I decided to keep the name partly because it's unusual, and I sort of feel like it fits me. And I didn't find out until just a very few years ago, and I'm in my 70s, so I was in my late 60s when I found out that the name Marnie is I believe it's a Welsh nickname for Margaret. Hmm. But I never knew that. And I have met, I think I'm up now to something like 23 other people that I've either met or heard about with that name. And I had it before Alfred Hitchcock did.
Well, and it's funny because I know one other Marnie myself. And I always thought that that was a really interesting name and I wondered where it came from. But it's what I like what you said is how it suits you. Either you became Marnie or Marnie, you know, suited who you became.
Yeah. Somehow or other, I'm comfortable with it. And, you know, it takes people a little while to catch on to the fact that it's not Marty or Barney or something else weird. But once they get it, they never forget it. And I don't know whether that has to do with my personality or my name, but, you know, once they get it, it's there.
Well, and I think, thank you for calling, Marnie. I think it's a little of both, that we do start to own our names and be that name in some way. And maybe those are the people who change their names who never really feel like it fits who they are. But I think when we embrace our names, it starts to become our identifying marker. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you're listening to Public Radio KCBX. And we are going to take your calls, 805-781-3875. But Brian, you have to tell the story about Kieran, though, because, again, people keep saying how, you know, they didn't find out till later the meaning of the names and how surprising it was. So you have to share that.
Yeah. Basically, we didn't know if it was a boy or girl that we were having until he came out and it was a boy. So we tried to get, you know, a list of boys' names and girls' names ready that we liked. And we had about 10 girls' names that we could have been happy with and no boys' names that we liked. But we had like three names that we were maybe, but we weren't happy with. And Kieran was one of them. And I don't even know how we came up with that one or where we found it. But we just threw it on the list of the couple that we liked. And then he was born and they were about to discharge us 5 days later because he was premature. He was almost a month premature. And he had jaundice enough where they kept us there for 5 days. And they're like, okay, we're going to discharge you, but it'd be way easier if you name him before you leave the hospital. And so we're like, okay, the 5 minute crunch. And it really actually wasn't that hard at all. Once we realized we had to name him, we had known him for 5 days and he was a Kieran. It just made sense. And so we're like, okay, we're going to name him Kieran, but wait, before we make that official, let's like look it up and see what it means. Make sure it's not like it was invented.
We're not
after
cursing him or
yeah,
something.
It wasn't invented after a mass murderer or somebody. And it means little dark one. And he was born 5 pounds, really little and early. And he had jaundice and was dark skinned. And it's like, wow, that's kind of amazing that he seems like a Kieran, and that describes his name. And his middle name is a Hawaiian word, Nalu, which means wave. And we live in Morro Bay. We left the hospital after naming Kieran, and we drove by the beach to check it out on our way home. And it was overcast and the ocean was gray and the waves were super small. So there were a bunch of little dark waves all over. And that's basically what we had named our son. And it was, I don't know, just everything felt like it was supposed to happen that way.
I do. And I totally believe that, too, that there is that power, the power in the name, the power in how we wear the name and where it comes from. Like there is something beyond just, hey, that sounds like a good name. Like mm-hmm. there always seems to be something behind it. Hi, Jackie. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. You know I listen to your show religiously.
Oh, thank you.
you know, it's Jackie Marcus. You know, you're probably thinking, how am I ever going to get rid of this gal?
I appreciate
it. I love each one of your topics, but I couldn't help thinking about the book and the film Namesake. It's one of my most favorite films by Junko Lahara. Did you ever see it, Namesake?
Not familiar with it.
Oh, gosh, you should see that. I mean, it came out quite a number of years ago now, but it's very interesting about the whole theme of the story revolves around how the son was named. And in order to go into that, you have to know the story of the father and what happened to him, but I won't go into that. But, yeah, you got to check that out. And another thing, too, is my husband, you know, got very interested in astrology and numerology, and he had studied some books on names and numerology, and it goes with the Indian culture. One of the other points I was going to lead up to with Namesake, that film is, you know, in India, they have names that coordinate with certain sounds that are spiritually resonating. And so it's not only just the meaning of some word that has to do with, or a name having to do with, you know, your family or something like that, but it's even deeper than that, and that just pronouncing the sound has certain intonations, certain sounds that are, I don't know how to explain it except to say that it's spiritually some kind of, like a spiritual kind of awareness.
Yeah, and I think it's from like connecting the soul or the spirit to, you know, everything that's greater around them. And I had read about that also, that there, you know, there's so many different traditions and how we gather names and how it connects a child to the religious culture or their spiritual experience. And I do find that fascinating. And I don't know, Jackie, if, you know, Namesake, did you say it was a book or a movie?
Yeah, it's a novel. It started as a novel, and then they made it into a movie.
Well, I will check that out, and thank you for sharing that. You know, it's funny, Brian, I always think that I've done enough research, and then something pops up like a book that has exactly to do with the title, and we've completely missed it.
Right.
805-781-3875. Hi, Shane, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, just wanted to say my name is Shane, and I'm a girl.
And I was surprised when I heard your voice.
That's my given name. My mother was English and liked all things Irish. And I guess I believe that Shane actually is rarely, but is also given to females. But it's just so rare that all my mail mostly says to Mr. Shane, whatever. So anyway, I've enjoyed the name because it is different.
And how do you think it's influenced who you've become in any way?
Maybe I think it sort of gives you a little more courage or something. I don't know, because it is unusual and because you sort of have to fight that battle a little bit, you know. But it kind of in the end, I've found that it's kind of cool because people tend to remember your name more because it is unusual for a woman. And I've always liked it. And she named my sister Robin, so that's also can be a man or woman's name. So always glad that she gave me the name she did.
Well, and it's interesting because when I was looking at the naming research studies, they said that, you know, as in our culture now, people want to have names that are more memorable, something that stands out, that makes them feel more unique, and because we've become much more of an individualistic society. But 40, 50 years ago, you know, it was less about being super individualistic and more about kind of blending in. And I'm not sure how old you are, but you might...
Well, I was born during the more the blending in time, because I'm nearly 70, so...
So you definitely were kind of outside of the norm at that time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And so did you have children of your own?
Yes.
So did you name them creatively also then?
I didn't give them really unusual names. No, but they were names at the time that were not, you didn't see that much. So, and my grandson is named Rex. I heard you mention Rex.
I did. That's so funny of all the names.
It's my uncle's name, and it's a strong name. I think strong names are kind of good.
Well, and it's funny because I hadn't planned to use that name, and it just came to me. So I must have known you were going to be calling later. Thanks for taking the time to call,
Shane.
Well,
I heard it, so.
It was meant to be. Enjoy your afternoon. Okay. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. What an interesting discussion. And while I don't think that names necessarily determine our destiny, I do think that the categories that people put us in based on names, whether those be from previous time when names did have significance and people would attach that stereotype, if you will, to a particular name, I think it's, you hit on it earlier when you talked about us having the power to shape the meaning that people pour into our name. For example, I have a grandfather who never called me by my name. He called me by a nickname that he only came up with for me, and that name was very powerful for me because it communicated love to me. Mm. He was the only one who ever called me that. And I never understood completely the power of that until my own mother passed away, had somewhat of an unusual name. Her first name was Claudine. And after her passing, I attended a ceremony that hospice conducted where they honored all the people that they had served in the past year. And it was as simple as her name being read out loud and spoken in the vacuum of her absence. Mm-hmm. That was so powerful to hear her actual name spoken, and I'm sure it was only powerful to me, but the power of her name remaining was very important, and I think that's demonstrated on headstones, written stories, other such remembrances of our names.
No, I agree. And, you know, when they've done on 9/11, when they read all the names of the people who died, you know, there is such power in having the names spoken out loud and giving them voice. And, you know, it gives us a way of honoring our presence, right? Honoring that we existed more than just a body that traveled on the land, that a name gives us an actual presence.
Yes, I visited the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C. at one point. And, of course, that took place in my lifetime, so it has a lot of emotional connection for me. Mm-hmm. But I was so surprised just at the power of a wall with names on it.
Yeah, it gives it significance, right? It makes it real. Yeah.
It connects to our emotion, the meaning that we pour in to the name.
Absolutely. Nancy, thank you for taking the time to call.
Thank you.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hi, Laurel. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello. I don't have anything really deep other than my folks named me Laurel in the 50s in Iowa, which was not a family name. And all of my siblings were not named family names, but my folks gave us a lot of thought. And I now work in horticulture and work for the Ag Department.
So there you go. Name is destiny. Right.
Right. And so when we chose our boys' names, who are now men, my husband and I chose not to do family names, but we went very deliberate to have man names, not boy names.
And how do you think that influenced who they've become?
I think they're wonderful as young men. Still to be decided, you know, who they become, as we all are. But
well, and And I agree with that, because I think, you know, and it's not that I'm saying I don't think people take a lot of time in thinking about the naming, but I do, what you said about naming a boy as opposed to an adult, that I think a lot of times we don't think about our children when we name them. We see them as babies, right? So we get, a cute baby name, but I don't think we think about the long-term impact, you know, is what does the, how does this name translate into adulthood, or who I see myself as in the community? But I just, I love the fact that you went into horticulture and your name is Laurel. That's exactly where I was going today, Laurel. So you got it.
Yes.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Inanna, did I pronounce it correctly?
Yeah, good job.
You're on the air. What's on your mind?
So, well, first of all, my name is Inanna, which I just thought was a valid reason to call in.
Absolutely.
But I'm a fan of your show. And I've been really fascinated by this subject. My mother took the whole naming thing very, very seriously and felt that it had great, profound importance and whatnot. And I'm not entirely sure that I completely agree with her, but it was definitely a big factor, you know, in my early life, and not being very, there are not very many Inannas out in the world.
And can you tell me what the meaning is, or what it was signified for her?
Yeah. So she dreamt the spelling of it when she was pregnant with me, and woke up and tried to figure out how to pronounce it, like a lot of people do when they see my name spelled, which is Y-N-A-N-A. And it wasn't until later, she died when I was very young, but it wasn't until later that I learned that it's the name of an ancient goddess. So I will occasionally meet people who studied ancient languages or are really into ancient goddesses or whatever, and they'll say, oh, Inanna, yeah, I know all about that, you know. And I did meet someone else with that name too, but there are some variations on the spelling, and one is mine, and then it's often spelled with an I-N-A-N-N-A. But she was an ancient goddess of Mesopotamia, the civilization of Sumeria, and she was, you know, an agricultural civilization. She was their main squeeze. She was their main deity.
I actually know that pronunciation and that spelling. So that's a beautiful name to carry. And I wonder did it impact you when you were younger in school? I mean, did you dread having your name called in class, or were you always proud and carry, you know, your name, with courage and confidence?
You know, it was really complicated. I was raised in Northern California hippie culture, and went to these small town schools where everybody was not really part of that. So I kind of, you know, like my own subculture was always kind of trying to figure out how to be assimilated. Mm-hmm. And I was just shy. My personality was very shy. I was kind of a natural rule follower. So it was very frustrating for me when I was young to have to pronounce my name four times. I mean, people just didn't, they just had no idea what to do with it. And I just remember being this little tiny being staring up at these super tall adults, and they go, what? You know, and they try. That was not fun. But, you know, as the years went on, it's who I am. I never wanted to change it or felt any shame or really wanting it to be different. I guess I was just kind of irritated that people couldn't, people couldn't just be a little more flexible, I guess, and trying to figure out how to say something new.
Well, it's nice because it sounds like it did give you a sense of confidence, because you never did want to change it. And it's as if you actually grew into your name, you know, that your name was just a little ahead of you and you needed to grow up into it and be able to fully own it as an adult.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
One other funny thing on the names is that my mother, as you're probably gathering, was a very alternate-minded person. And she let me choose my own middle name when I was, I don't remember how old I was. You know, maybe 9 or something like that. And I remember taking that task incredibly seriously and, you know, pondered it for weeks and narrowed it down to all these things. And then being a 9-year-old girl, chose Rose, which was, you know, really my dream. And so when I got married, my husband was raised in a very traditional family. And I said, you know, we don't need to name our kids these crazy things. I totally get it that wouldn't be you. But if we could keep the tradition of letting them pick their middle name, you know, to honor my mother, I would really like that. And he agreed. He was like, yeah, that's totally fine. That's a great idea. Well, the funny part is that our older son is a very conservative person. And all of the names that he came up with were traditional family names. So it was just this very funny kind of, I don't know. I just thought that was really fascinating. And he ended up not picking one because he couldn't decide. And so my dad's middle name or my grandpa's name, or, you know, like if he were going to choose his own name, it was going to be traditional. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It skips a generation, I think.
Yeah, I just thought it was such a great irony. It still kind of makes me laugh.
Yeah, you were giving him the freedom of choice, and he said, no, I want to go with the rules, Mom.
Exactly, yeah. And he would have really loved to have been given his grandfather's middle name or whatever, you know, like, yeah, it's just, you just can't predict that stuff.
And it goes back to what I was saying earlier, that as we come into Mother's Day this Sunday, there is a lot to that work of mothering, isn't there? That in our best attempts, there are a lot of ways that we still fall greatly short, and somehow our kids make it through without our guidance. Thank you, Inanna, for calling in. Kathleen, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello. I was enjoying you talking about your daughters, and when you talked about Mother's Day, I was thinking, what a monumental task, especially mothers, if not fathers, have in naming the children. And I would like to talk about my daughter, who I named, or her and her and my husband named Via Kathleen, because he wanted my name and her name. Mm-hmm. And I just love the name Via, but I didn't go with any of the traditional spellings. I decided to go with the feminine spelling of Leigh with an A. So she laughs. I say, I just love your name, and I still love your name. And she laughs. She says, yeah, but every time I give someone my name, they go Leah. She goes, yeah, I just tell them you have to spell it that way. So it's kind of funny.
It was too much to carry all of the letters with her, I guess.
Yeah, but I love the way you talked about your daughters and then your baby Georgia, you know, and she named her daughter, my granddaughter, Evelyn Rose. Mm-hmm. And it's not a name I would have picked out, but she loves it, and I hope she loves it as much as I still love her name.
And I think as the mothers, that is one of the gifts we get for going through labor, is we get the joy of giving our child a name that we're going to enjoy saying for the rest of their lives.
That's true. I'll have to tell her that. Yeah, I'm a proud mom and a proud grandma. I know you are too.
I am, Kathleen. Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you.
And isn't it funny, Brian, how many roses have been in the story today?
I've noticed that.
I think I need to look up roses or come look in, because somehow I keep feeling this message rose in my life somewhere. And because I don't think it's that common of a name.
Yeah.
But it's come up in almost half our phone calls today.
Yeah, it's coming in at least three that I can recall off the top of my head.
So is there a Rose in your family?
My grandma's name is Rose.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Grandma Rose. Or she might have been my great-grandma. I think she was my great-grandma.
I think you should know the difference.
they both died when I was like three, and I'm trying to remember. It was my great-grandma.
And so, you know, it's interesting as we get kind of to the end of the show, and I'm so glad so many people resonated with this topic, and yay, Kirsten, for coming up with the idea to do this show. That I do think a lot about, you know, the destiny part, nomen est omen, you know, name is destiny, and does, you know, for centuries, our names were badges, as I said earlier, right? They gave information about your class, about your education level, about your ethnic background, about your clan or your tribe, and, you know, and or at least your parents, and how that's kind of carried over throughout, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years to where we are today. And although, you know, we want to be a culture that is open-minded and fair and equal opportunities for everyone, research still shows that those names we carry can give us advantages and also disadvantages. You know, that we make assumptions about people based on their names when we first hear them. So as far as we think we've come as a culture, we still have different assumptions about the name Tyrone as we do about the name Philip. And those are the two names they used in a study to see what people's responses were. You know, they showed a picture of a young man and then gave two different names and how they responded based on the name, but they saw the picture. So I just find that's fascinating that the name brings along with it also some internal feelings of, oh, I know who this person is. I know what that name means. So I find it really interesting. 805-781-3875. Hi, Deborah. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
My name is Deborah, as I said, and I was born in 1958. My parents, that was the time when Debbie Reynolds was famous.
Mm-hmm.
So I was called Debbie. And when I was 19, I was a tall blonde in a man's world, and I decided that the only way that I could get a little respect was to have people call me by my given name. Mm. So for the rest of my life, I have been Deborah. It also tells me if people assume my name is Debbie and they assume a familiarity with me when they first meet me, that tells me something about them. And it took me 20 years to retrain my family, and by that time I really didn't care.
Yeah.
Because I had made my life.
Well, and it's interesting because when we're establishing ourselves, it does matter, right, how people respond to us or how we're called. I mean, with the name Elizabeth, I have a ton of nicknames that people can try to give me, and I use Elizabeth, and my mom's very happy about that. But when people want to call me Liz, you know, I get very anxious because it's like, no, I don't identify with that, or Betty, you know, or something. And it is true that when people shorten a name quickly, you think, you're not paying attention to who I am, or you're trying to get too close too quickly.
Yes, I agree. And my grandmother's name was Elizabeth. They called her Bessie her entire life, and it wasn't until her funeral that I learned her name was Elizabeth. So it's amazing what happens to us and our names, and I appreciate your show today.
Thank you, Deborah, and thank you for keeping your name and owning your strength. Have a good afternoon. And our last call today goes to Jeremy. Hey, Jeremy, we're not a lot of guys today, so thank you for chiming in.
Oh, you're welcome. I wish I had something important to offer the conversation. but I found a website, wordsmith.org, and on that you can do an anagram for anything you type in, and it's a lot of fun to find out the anagram for your name.
So what did you find out?
Well, I found out that you know, my name is Jeremy Potter, just sort of basic, and it you know, I was like, it's a name. But when I put it through there, I became Jerome Pretty, and I love that. So
it sounds a little bit like a porn name, though, Jeremy. I don't know.
Well, it's my rap name.
Oh, a rap name. Okay. Thank you. And how did you come to the name Jeremy? Did your parents ever tell you?
Well, that's a story. My mother was given it in a dream, an angel showed her me in a dream and said, "This is your son, Jeremy."
That's a beautiful story. See, that's what I was talking about, is that I think we underestimate the power of names and how they come to us. And so did you always think your mom was a little off, or you're like, okay, I buy that story, Mom?
Oh, yeah. My mom's name is Michael. I knew she was a lot off.
But she also probably is connected to the angels then in some way.
No, I love her. She's great, but she's, yeah.
Don't forget it's Mother's Day on Sunday, Jeremy.
Oh, I know.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you. See, now there we go, Ryan. You know, you're not the only one whose, you know, name came from the other worlds.
You know, Jeremy told me before he went on, like, about the anagrams. He's like, so, for instance, Clint Eastwood's name in an anagram is Old West Movie.
No way.
It was something like that. It was basically about Old Western. Can't remember what it was exactly, but it came out like that.
So you type in your name and wordsmith.org, and then you find it all. See, there is so much power, and we know that words are powerful. We know that language is powerful. So I don't know, just paying attention to how we use names and even the nicknames. And we could do a whole other show about nicknames, because I've never even told you my nickname that my family calls me. So I'll have to save that for next year.
All right.
This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can listen to all of our shows if you go to kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. They're all listed. You can stream them there, or you can podcast our show on your device by going to iTunes and podcasting or Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'd love to hear from you on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can leave me messages or just find out what we're doing. And then you can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Thank you, as always, to all my listeners for participating in the conversation. It's not too late to give us a pledge, because I know that we're still trying to finish up our pledge drive for spring. And that's if you'd like to make a donation in support of this show, please give us a call
at 549-8855 or go to our website, kcbx.org.
Thank you for supporting Public Radio, KCBX.